So we did have our snow. I still have a little snow in my front yard. I don't know about you, but still a little dab there. We've got, just for your overall stories, we've got a new Bundy situation up in Oregon. We've got the story of Trump Democrats that I told you about, Muslims killing gays. There's a story about this kid that was found in a leader of ISIS's room. And I guess the guy had him there for sexual purposes. They killed the kid. You know what they did to the leader? They demoted him. They threw the kid off a building. It's crazy. Now, there's a lot of women that are coming out now that are going after Hillary, saying that she is not who she claims to be. So we will get into that, of course. But let's get into a little bit of your NFL. It was, I don't know, it was not really that exciting of an NFL day, in my opinion. So I'll just read you the scores. New York Jets 17, Buffalo 22, Pittsburgh 28, Cleveland 12, New England, believe it or not, 10, Miami 20, New Orleans 20, Atlanta 17, Baltimore 16, Cincinnati 24, Jacksonville 6, Houston 30, Houston's in the playoffs, Tennessee 24, Indiana 30, Washington 34, Dallas, well, I won't tell you, I'll play that one for you, Philadelphia 35, New York Giants 30, Detroit 24, Chicago 20, San Diego, well, I'll play that one for you too. Arizona got a big surprise. I'll play that one for you. Tampa Bay 10, Carolina 38, Oklahoma 17, Kansas City, who's doing very well, 23, St. Louis Rams 16, San Francisco 19, Minnesota 20, Green Bay 13. So if you're on these, if you're going for your team, a lot of these teams that were doing very, very well in the beginning of the year, not really doing that well right now. So toss of who could be in the finals. But I don't know. I just think that if I saw Carolina in there, I wouldn't be surprised. If I saw some other teams in there, I think you're the way that the season is ending, though, for a lot of the formerly strong teams, is just a little bit starting out with a bang and ending with a whimper. And I have a little bit here from the Seahawks pounding the Cardinals.
Richard Sherman and the Seahawks pump the pick on the Cardinals. Arizona, winners of 9 straight. Both teams going to the postseason midway through the second. Russell Wilson to Will Tukuafu. First career touchdown catch for him. Seahawks up 17-6. Yeah, celebrate. Next Seahawks possession. Wilson to Chase Kaufman. He scoots in for 6. Seahawks up 24-6. Later in the second, Wilson to Jermaine Kearse. Oh, great throw, great catch there. Threads the needle. 3 touchdowns, no interceptions for Russell Wilson. Seahawks win it 36-6. Snap Arizona's 9-game win streak.
And so that one for you. And I got your Washington Dallas head overview here. Summary.
Kirk Cousins and the Redskins visiting the Cowboys. Renewing pleasantries. First quarter. Jamison Crowder on the screen. Blockers out front. And he's going to use that screen. Following his blockers inside the 5. Washington in the red zone. Very next play. Kirk Cousins, play action. Finding Ryan Grant. You like that? Redskins up 7-0. Later in the first, Cousins looking for Pierre Garçon. Oh, avoids a sack. Garçon goes up and gets it. 39-yard touchdown 14-0 burgundy and gold. Under a minute to go in the first. Cousins to Crowder, touchdown. Cousins, 4,135 yards this season, most passing yards in a single season of Redskins history.
That's hard to believe. He really took over the job from RG3. I was just thinking it must be strange for RG3 to go from being an absolute superstar from his first year and then have it turn so badly for him. I think because of his knee injury, they say his attitude is bad. He can't accept reinventing his game. I don't really know about that, but something went wrong for him there. Here is your Vikings-Green Bay game.
NFC North title on the line. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers hosting the Vikings. Late fourth quarter, Packers down 20-13. Fourth and goal. Rodgers looking to the end zone, intercepted by Xavier Rhodes. But the Packers would get another chance. 15 seconds to go. Aaron Rodgers trying to make something happen. Throws to Richard Rodgers. Rodgers tackled inbounds. Clock ticking down. Aaron Rodgers trying to get everyone to the line. Hey, we did this before on a Thursday night against the Lions, and we won it. Can we win it on a Sunday night? Last chance. And this time, batted down, and the Vikings win it 20-13, win their first NFC North title since 2009. The Vikings will host the Seahawks in the wild card.
Hard to believe, huh? Really kind of a fantastic game for the Vikings. They've resurrected their franchise through this season. Teddy Bridgewater's done a pretty good job. Here is your Broncos game.
Peyton entering the game in the third quarter to a standing ovation from the crowd in Denver after five turnovers to Brock Osweiler in the offense against the Chargers. On Manning's first drive, he kept things short. Virgil Green, 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. And this is called yards after catch. Will Yak. Upfield, 14-yard gain. Manning's next pass. Jordan Norwood, just 6 downfield. Peyton, 4 or 5 on passes, traveling less than 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Fourth quarter, time to go deep. Shorter going deep. Our play action. Peyton sees Emmanuel Sanders, 32 yards down the field. Oh, look at that. Oh, just overthrown, incomplete. 1 for 4 on passes, traveling more than 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. He seems short. Manning's biggest impact, though, may have been on the rushing attack. Because Peyton back there, they're like, oh, he's going to pass. We've got to respect that to Ronnie. He'll take the handoff. Yeah, Ronnie's gone. That's the game-winning touchdown. Broncos averaged almost 3 yards per rush more than Manning in the game. They win.
The Chargers have had a heartbreaking year. Phillip Rivers should be in the prime of his career, and he does not look great. All right, so let's we'll come back. We'll reload. I've got stories for you. I think we need to talk about this Bundy thing. And also, there is a movement by the president to restrict guns that you need to know about. It's 6:32. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. 523-1450. I found my text phone, but I think I left it at the office. Thank you.
Okay, so some of your headlines here. Jeff Bezos, the guy that owns Amazon, the guy that built Amazon from scratch, the guy that built Amazon, the colossus of commerce, capitalism, internet, from his garage in Seattle. Why do all these great companies come out of Seattle? I wonder. Microsoft, Amazon, Starbucks, Boeing. It is a beautiful place. That's where I was born, as a matter of fact. But anyway, Jeff Bezos, a tax-avoiding Bond villain trying to take over the world. He is bald. He has an insatiable lust for money. That's one story. So will he end up with more money than what's the guy's name? Bill whatever from Microsoft. I would think so. He made $20 billion last year, something like that. Isn't that incredible? Other stories. Paula Jones goes after Hillary and says she and her husband say you're no friend of women. Hillary Clinton heckled in New Hampshire by rape survivor. And naked prostitutes chase gunmen through Atlanta hotel. That's crazy. Few other stories here, but let me get to this. Want to get you this, the information on what's going on with the new Bundy activities up in Oregon. Married with Children, remember that? Not Ted Bundy, but one of his cousins, apparently. Wasn't Ted Bundy the serial murderer? From CNN, armed groups leader in federal building, we will be here as long as it takes. And so we got a little CNN report here, but this was from a few hours ago. And it's the start of the article. Armed anti-government protesters have taken over a building in Federal Wildlife Refuge in Oregon, accusing officials of unfairly punishing ranchers who refused to sell their land. And one of the things that happened in this story was that these members of this family were prosecuted by the government and punished and sent to prison. When they got done, the government came back and said, you have not served all the time that you were supposed to, which is kind of a double jeopardy, it sounds to me, but that would be the argument. Here's from CNN.
A group of protesters broke into an unoccupied building at an Oregon federal wildlife refuge Saturday. They claim to be taking a stand against the federal government's control and use of the land. The armed occupation broke off from a peaceful rally earlier in the day to support Dwight and Stephen Hammond. Their father-son ranching duo expected to report to prison Monday.
It isn't my decision, obviously. It's a sentence.
Hammond and his son were convicted of arson, setting at least 130 acres of federal land on fire. The Hammonds maintain it was a controlled blaze that accidentally got out of hand. Prosecutors, however, argue the flames were meant to cover up poaching.
It's sort of frightening when there's people making threats and people touting guns.
People are afraid.
Among the armed protesters, the son of Nevada rancher Cliven Bundy. He was at the center of a similar standoff with the federal government last year over grazing fees.
This is not a time to stand down. It is a time to stand up.
The younger Bundy called on militia groups to demand in Harney County and demand the government restore, quote, the people's constitutional rights, part of a vague and vocal anti-government message.
The people have been abused long enough, really. Their lands and their resources have been taken from them to the point where it's putting them literally in poverty.
The Hammonds, however, are distancing themselves from this latest face-off. Their attorney, communicating in a short but clear statement to the county sheriff's office, says neither Ammon Bundy nor anyone within this group or organization speak for the Hammond family. Those armed protesters, however, say their demonstration is peaceful, but if provoked, they will defend themselves.
I like that guy, the
first clip. Well, it's very frightening, and they're using guns and everything. But anyway, I'll keep. I wonder if there's is Hammond related to Bundy? I'm going to have to look this up. But, well, we'll take a little tiny break here and come back and talk about what do I got here for you. You know what? I think I want to get into the Trump Democrats because it really blew my mind when I realized what was going on. Kelly here, 7:41 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, 523-1450. And we're going to come back and get into Trump Democrats. That'll really shake your world up. So I've got this story, and I haven't seen it that many other places, but it is really very a strange thing when I realized that there was this, really a massive number of Democrats that I'm trying to pull this story up here for you, massive number of Democrats that are out there. And when I saw this, okay, so this is it. If you're looking for the story, Google, and this is from an area in the New York Times called The Upshot, but just Google Donald Trump's strongest supporters, a certain kind of Democrat, which was, I'm telling you, I didn't really understand the Trump phenomenon until I saw this story. All right, so I'll just kind of lead off with a little bit of the beginning of the article. Donald Trump holds a dominant position in national polls in the Republican race, in no small part because he is extremely strong among people on the periphery of the GOP coalition. He is strongest among Republicans who are less affluent, less educated, and less likely to turn out to vote. His very best voters are self-identified Republicans who nonetheless are registered as Democrats. It's a coalition that's concentrated in the South, Appalachia, and the industrial North. According to data provided to the Upshot by Civis Analytics, a Democratic data firm, Mr. Trump's huge advantage among these groups poses a challenge for his campaign because it may not have the turnout operation necessary to mobilize regular voters. But it is just as big of a challenge for the Republican Party. All right. So, you know, it goes on and, you know, kind of talks about this. But I'm telling you right now, when I saw this data, I realized, you know, all the people that are attacking Trump and saying that he doesn't have a prayer, he's unelectable. I mean, I don't care who these people call themselves. I find it strange. This polling company is saying that there's a bunch of Republicans out there that are registered as Democrats. I mean, you're either Democrat or you're Republican. Now, you might see yourself as a conservative Democrat, but we're talking probably tens of millions of people that he is taking out of the other side. Or he could be taking out of the other side. I mean, if the race was to happen right now and he was to get all these people, let's say a certain percentage of them go out to vote, 50% of them, whatever. Whatever the number, the percentage is, probably 10%. Those are people that would normally vote for the Democrat because they are Democrats. So they're going to be voting in the Democratic primary if they're voting during the primary. Now think about that. We're talking a very major number, a very major percent of these people that are Democrats that are default Trump voters. So the upshot is that, you know, when you hear people say that Donald Trump does not have a chance in a general election, it's the same thing that people have been saying virtually the entire time that Trump's been running. He's not a serious candidate. He's a celebrity. He's just a billionaire. He's too insulting. He's too controversial. Now, Hispanics have written him off. Blacks have written him off. He's not never going to get the GOP doesn't like him. And it was So let me play this thing. We'll take a little break here. Let me come back. I want to play a clip from this guy, Mike Tyson, the boxer. I thought it was pretty entertaining. It was pretty insightful. AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back at 649. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so Donald Trump is polling about 2-1, and you're going to say, well, he's never going to get minorities. He's not going to get Hispanics. He's not going to get the intelligent, educated GOP members. And here's a little clip from this, a little excerpt from this article from New York Times. Perhaps above all else, the data shows that Mr. Trump has broad support in the GOP, spanning all major demographic groups. He leads among Republican women and among people in well-educated and affluent areas. He even holds a nominal lead among Republican respondents that Civis estimated are Hispanic based on their names and where they live. Interesting, huh? Well, here's Mike Tyson, the former world heavyweight champion boxer, what he says about Trump.
You and Donald Trump have a big history. He's assisted you in your career. He's supported you on occasion. What are your thoughts on him today? You know, do you think that he's going to
be president of the United States? He should be president of the United States. That's what he should be. He should be president of the United States. Why are people mad at the people? Because this is who the people want to be president. You see, when they say, you see Donald Trump's polls, oh man, see, this is not going to happen because it's going to go down. So they're saying these people don't know what they're talking about. They're telling the people right in their face, all the Republicans, all the Democrats, all the independents, they're saying right in the people's face, you don't know what you're doing. You gotta vote for me next week. You ain't thinking about Donald Trump. You're just riding on the bandwagon of success. They're telling us we're stupid. That's what they're telling us. And do you see that too? No, really.
Absolutely.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
These people are stupid. That's going to go down. That means you ain't going to keep your vote there. They're talking to the interviewer, but they're saying it to the people. Like, the people don't listen to them. They hear, oh, that's not going to last. Like, the people don't want to keep the numbers the way they are. Huh?
So he's got your vote.
Yeah, hell, big time.
So
why wouldn't anybody like that? A guy that came from where he came from and doing what he's doing, and now this is where he's at now. Know what that means? That don't mean he's a bad guy. The people don't know what they're doing. That means the people are tired of what you've been doing, what we've been doing the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. That's all it says. Let's try something new. We tried Obama, right? Time for a change, so we got change. So now let's try something new.
Right.
Let's run America like a business.
Yeah.
But no colors matters. Everybody, whoever could do the job gets the job.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that you obviously, you know, he's run an incredible, you know, company, but what else is it that you like about him?
This is just what it is. He's the man right now with the like, regardless of what I like about him or anything. This is who he is. He's winning. He's ahead of the polls right now. And we as human beings, we always say, hey, let's treat people right. Let's take these people and let's treat them right. Let's treat immigration right. Let's do these people right. Stop killing these people. Stop. And hey, this guy's winning fair and square. He's not bribing anybody. You know, if he's doing this fair and square, and we're all for the people, and the people want this guy, and why are the people bad, and why is he a bad guy? We're just envious. We're getting beaten, and that's just what it is. That's who we are as people, too. We get mad when we get beat. The most humblest loser in the world goes home at night and cry. We're getting beat. We're sad. We're sore.
All right, so then later in this interview, this guy says maybe I can find it here at the end. He says, what do you think about Hillary or whatever? And he says, I'm not into that. Check this out.
I don't believe 90% of the country that believe Latinos that were born here and their parents are illegal got to go. It hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it hasn't happened yet.
All right. Hillary or Bernie?
Excuse me?
Hillary or Bernie Sanders?
I don't want to talk about that. Hillary Clinton. I mean, if you're for Hillary Clinton, if you're a Frankie or somebody like that, what is it? Because Frankie has already said that he thought she had run her race, that she was a spent force when she was getting in a lot of trouble for the emails and everything. He kind of wrote her off. But, you know, I think the mystery is why the party supports her no matter what. And I think the answer to that is that the Democratic Party is a loose confederation of tribes. And so if you're signed on to liberalism in general, then you're good enough to lead, just like Obama. And it doesn't really
matter how successful, because no matter what, the opposition is going to be much less interested in your supporting your things. I don't think the analysis goes any deeper than that. Well, it is about 6:58 and we're about to take a break on the hour. Man, I got some other good stories for you. You know what? I've got this article from the Daily Telegraph that I thought was very, very well written. And there was a couple of articles, and one was by Christopher Booker. That's this guy here. And then the other one was by a guy by the name of Joel Kotkin. I think I'm going to get into those as a way of framing 2016. We're just kind of starting to get our motors revved up here to start the laps for 2016. So anyway, Kelly here, and awfully great to spend a little bit of time with you. We'll take a break on the hour and come back and pick up these stories and a couple more. I've got a great story about Jay-Z's wife. What's her name? Beyonce. Very weird story. You're going to love to hear about it. And for the predictions of Coco the Gorilla.
706. And it was a cold one last night, friends. I think it's 32 degrees right now, but I think it was down in the mid to low 20s last night. Well, I've got just a little bit more Trump before we get into those other stories. Trump, Clinton created ISIS with Obama is one of his claims.
I see out there just happened today in Tehran, they're burning down the Saudi embassy. You see that? Now, what that is Iran wants to take over Saudi Arabia. They always have. They want the oil, okay? They've always wanted that. They have a bunch of dishonest people. They've created ISIS. Hillary Clinton created ISIS with Obama. Created with Obama.
All right, so I think that Obama is getting very energized by all of the attacks that are coming at him from Donald Trump, and he's going to have a town hall. Why didn't this guy have a town hall to explain some of the crazy decisions that he's made? Why does he have to wait to get criticized? Here's the deal with Iran.
You look at what's going on, and I say the Iran deal. So they get $150 billion. They have the right to self-inspect. Think of that one. They get a self-inspect. And the other inspections take place over a 24, they have to wait 24 days. But the clock doesn't start ticking for a long time, right? For a long time. So the 24 days could be forever. By that time, they'll sweep up the floors. They'll paint them battleship gray. They'll say, we weren't doing nuclear weapons here. By the way, I have to be honest. We gave them so much money, they really don't have to do too much more research. They can buy the damn things, okay? What we have done is so incredible. But then I said to myself, it's one of the great deals. And then we never got our prisoners back. And now Iran wants to start negotiating for the prisoners. We never even asked for the prisoners. And we should have said, before, first day, like 3-4 years ago, did you ever see a negotiation take so long? And we gave every point. We say, we want this and this. No. Oh, okay. We'll take it. Then we want this. It's very important. No. Oh, this is Secretary Kerry. Great negotiator. He did not read the art of the deal, folks. So we want this. We want that. And we didn't say it that way. We said it this way. Would it be possible for us to have anything? Could we get anything? Just anything, please. No, you can't have anything. Oh, okay, we'll take it. This is, you know, a lot of people think there's something else going on because it's almost like there has to be something else going on. I don't believe there is. I just don't think they're competent. But some of these decisions that are made, for instance, the deal with Iran, there has to be something else going on. Who would make that deal? The people from the negotiators from Iran would leave the room, go back to Tehran. They go back and they start celebrating on the streets. The deal hasn't been done yet. Calling the United States imbeciles, calling us the worst thing, burning our flags. Then they come back and they negotiate like nothing happened. And we never leave.
Yeah, there is a couple of things about this story are very hard to believe with the deal with Iran. It was one of the things is that we did not ask for our hostages back. And when they asked Obama, he said, I didn't want to confuse the issues or whatever it was that he said. It was something along those lines. You don't even try. Obama's the kind of guy that gets to a negotiation table, gets to a card table. He gets to a card table. He lays all of his cards on the table while he's playing. Face up. Seriously, that's what he does. He tells, there's a situation going on, and one country's doing something it shouldn't to another, and he says, well, that we will not allow for that to happen. By the way, we would never attack over this. So you've taken all of the mystery out of the situation. You've taken the threat of force away, and what are you left with? It makes liberalism look so bad that I just really,
I mean, there have to be, aren't there liberals out there that are just dying inside when they watch Obama, or are they, I'm just curious, is it that he's your guy no matter what, or I don't get it. I don't understand what the at this point. I remember what the original argument was for Obama, that he was going to heal the nation. He's going to be a post-racial president. He's going to save us from economic collapse. He's going to save the economy. He's going to cut spending in half. I mean, all of the crazy promises, most transparent administration in history. And then you get to the end of his time, and honestly, I don't get what the point is anymore. He's a black president. All right. He's been in there 7 years. Okay. Is he a permanently good president because of his race, or I'm just curious. I've never, ever seen anybody act like him. I've never seen anybody get away with more stuff and not be criticized by the media. I mean, Bill Clinton was torn to shreds compared to Obama. And it's very sad to see. Well, we'll take a little break here, and I'm going to come back and talk to you about a couple of these stories that I think you'll find interesting. And we'll 7:13, we'll be right back. It's about 32 degrees outside. Before I get into those articles, I wanted to let you know what's going on with guns. Here is a statement from Obama on the BBC about guns. He wants to take them away. Get this. This is my problem with this. Just like my problem with the Syrians. The problem with Syrians is the president said that he was going to not allow this civil war to occur in he was going to draw a line in the red, you know, a red line in the sand or wherever. And he was going to, you know, get involved in Syria. Then he doesn't get involved. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are killed. And the Syrian refugees that could have been avoided, he puts the onus, the responsibility, the guilt trip on us because we don't want to take them in. To me, that's nuts. Total hypocrisy. And in this situation, he wants to get rid of guns because they cause the problem. When we've got these people, this radicalized woman who came from Saudi Arabia, who was on social media. Here's the hypocrisy here. Obama has apparently told the NSA or whoever, don't get into social media because that's private. And at the same time, they're taking all of her phone calls and all of her emails, all of our texts, like he really cares about privacy. I mean, give me a break. Anyway, here we go.
This Friday, I'll be thinking about my friend Gabby Giffords, 5 years into her recovery from the shooting in Tucson. And all across America, survivors of gun violence and those who lost a child or a parent or a spouse to gun violence are forced to mark such awful anniversaries every single day. And yet Congress still hasn't done anything to prevent what happened to them from happening to other families. 3 years ago, a bipartisan common sense bill would have required background checks for virtually everyone who buys a gun. Keep in mind, this is a policy that is supported by some 90% of the American people. It was supported by a majority of NRA households, but the gun lobby mobilized against it and the Senate blocked it. Since then, tens of thousands of our fellow Americans have been mowed down by gun violence. Tens of thousands. Each time we're told that common sense reforms like background checks might not have stopped the last massacre or the one before that, so we shouldn't do anything. We know we can't stop every act of violence, but what if we tried to stop even one? What if Congress did something, anything, to protect our kids from gun violence? A few months ago, I directed my team at the White House to look into any new actions I can take to help reduce gun violence. And on Monday, I'll meet with our Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, to discuss our options. Because I get too many letters from parents and teachers and kids.
I can't even bear to hear the end of that. It's so obvious. Barack Obama is like the Mr. Rogers of the political world. He says the most trite and obvious things and so frequently misstates facts. It's very, very shocking. All right, so CNN is going to host Obama Town Hall on Guns in America.
As President Obama leaves Hawaii and makes his way back to Washington today, he's set to unveil new executive actions he hopes will curb a seemingly endless string of mass shootings in America while he's been in office. The president has been candid about his frustration with Congress for refusing to tighten gun control laws.
We know we can't stop every act of violence, but what if we tried to stop even one? What if Congress did?
My reaction to that is these people that he's bringing in from Syria, these 100,000 people that, I mean, why is it that there's an area of government control that the president he controls? Why is it always the right thing to do to use that power? In Obama's land, power is self-justifying. If you can use the power, it's okay to use the power. The decisions that you make are right. That's not natural law. That's not the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the Declaration. That's leftism. That's a Marxist theory. I know this because I happen to have written an article on it, but there is no, you know, it's kind of funny. We have been told repeatedly that Marxism is the way into the future, socialism and all that stuff. So we're repeatedly being told that all the time. It's the right way to do things. Don't you care about the poor, the widows, the orphans, the whatever, transgenders, the... And so we're told that the right way to do things is through socialism. Did you know they don't even have a theory of law? What they call jurisprudence. They don't have a theory of law because in leftism, it's not about having a theory of law and developing it and following it. It's about power. That's all it is. So I just find him so contradictory and hypocritical. If you want to protect people, even save one life, don't bring tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people out of a jihad zone that you yourself admitted you couldn't give weapons to because you didn't know if they were jihadists or not. Don't bring those into the country and kill my fellow American brothers and sisters.
Something, anything to protect our kids from gun violence.
Now he says he won't wait for Congress and he's planning his own measures to expand background checks. Following his announcement, President Obama will join Anderson Cooper for an exclusive 1 hour live town hall event on the issue of guns and gun control in America. Anderson and the president will talk about this controversial issue from all sides.
That's Thursday at 8 p.m. All right, here's the Donald's response to that.
President Obama is expected to expand background checks for purchases at gun shows. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't like it. I don't like anything having to do with changing our Second Amendment. We have plenty of rules and regulations. There's plenty of things that they can do right now that are already there. They don't do them. We have a tremendous mental health problem. We're closing places all over the world, all over the country they're closing, but they are closing all over the world. Tremendous mental health problems. Nobody's doing anything about that. All they want to do is blame the guns. And it's not the gun that pulls the trigger. So I don't like it. I don't like what he's doing.
All right, so what do you think about what he's doing? I mean, you might say on the one side from the left or from any direction that if it wasn't for all these guns, we wouldn't be having all these problems. But, I mean, the last shooting was jihad, whether it was did by people in the Middle East or if it was a self-starting jihad, it was jihad. And those people could have been stopped because this lady was on social networking putting her opinion out there, and instead of doing it, the president comes up with one of his many, many, many crazy contradictions. Well, we can't get into their privacy of social network. It's social networking. It's not private to begin with. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll put you on hold. I'll be right back. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, good morning. It's Edward.
Hey, Edward, what's up?
You know, Happy New Year and, you know, happy holidays. I just called to make one statement. You know, last week, remember, just the lady who drove her car on the sidewalk and running over all those people?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what is he going to do next? Is he going to ban cars from driving? Okay, they take the guns away. Now, if people start driving their cars and trying to attempt to kill innocent people, then what is next?
All right. It's a typical liberal approach of you do the thing that's most obvious, not the thing that's most intelligent. Thanks for the call, Edward. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Morning, Kelly. This is Jim. How are you doing this? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jim. What's up?
You know, I was discussing this gun deal here with several people in the last month or so. And I asked, you know, when you get into an argument with somebody that we got to do something about guns, here's the mental picture I threw out to them to ask this question. And if I said to them, I want you to just picture in your mind every gun in the world put into a huge pile, and they'd be miles and miles high. And you, as a person who objects to having guns, walk up to that pile and point to a certain gun and say, get up and kill somebody. Is that gun going to get up and shoot somebody or not? And they looked at me with deer in the headlight look eyes, and I said, no, it's going to take somebody to grab that gun and get up and use it. So is it the fault of the gun or is it the fault of the person?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I don't know. I mean, when I heard that he was just trying to deal with the gun shows rule, I felt a little bit of relief. But, you know, I mean, I find one of the strangest things about this president, he seems so incredibly self-satisfied. He's always got this kind of smile, this kind of smug look on his face. I really don't think he's made that much of an inroad against guns since he's been in office.
Well, narcissism presents itself probably the best I've ever seen it in this president. I mean, there's nothing that happens, absolutely
yes.
nothing that happens
Agreed.
Anywhere. It's
Agreed.
His fault. It's always somebody
it's
else.
It's always somebody else's fault. And when you attack or criticize a narcissist, which they take as an attack, if you criticize a narcissist, they think there's something wrong with you because, as you said, they don't accept the idea that they're flawed. And they therefore think that you've got bad motives. You know, there's something wrong with you for you to criticize them. But he gets criticized and he's not even involved in a situation. He has to get involved and misuse his opportunity to access the media and attack people.
Well, you know, back some time ago, Kelly, I cannot cite where or what or anything like that, but I do remember hearing or reading, I believe it was on the internet, that said that they were taking some kind of a I don't know, a sample test of the brain of a liberal.
Yeah.
And they say that there's some sort of genetic defect in order to think the way they think. Actually, there is something up there that's short-circuiting.
Is it the pea brain syndrome?
You know, Kelly, I don't really know. They say this is not some news guy that said this, come out of some sort of a scientific study that said that in order to believe the things that they believe, they have to have a genetic mental defect. There has to be a gene off somewhere.
Wow. Well, I know
it's
that
not, it's not logical. You
well,
know,
my,
to blame
I'm sorry,
them,
go ahead.
To
go
take
ahead.
These people who, and another thing, Kelly, you know, when you look at where shootings take place, they take place in gun-free zones. There isn't a gun alive that's going to walk into a place that's a gun-free zone and shoot somebody. It's going to take the person who has that gun to walk into that gun-free zone and use it. And anytime you start posting, you know, again, there's this concealed carry thing versus open carry, you know, but when you walk into a establishment and if it's a gun-free zone, you've got, it's like going out and shooting, you know.
Good point, Jim. Good point. I got to go to a break. Thank you. All right, folks. Good points there. I just Googled what Jim said. This is, I mean, I would assume that if anybody's done so-called science on the brains, well, there's a bunch of articles here, but I would assume they all attack. I mean, it goes without saying that people that are liberal are going to assume, you know, obviously it's going to be back and forth. Liberals think that conservatives have pea brains. Conservatives think that liberals are missing their frontal lobes or whatever, but I'll have to look into this on the break, but I don't know. It's pretty funny. But anyway, I do think the president's a narcissist. Here's my whole beef with this guy. Stand for anything you want, run for office. I'm not going to be offended. I might not agree with you. I might radically criticize you, but the beauty of America, getting up to stand you believe. I've got a couple of beefs here. Number one, though, is this group of people that has come into power the last 20 or 30 years has really represented this notion that all that is necessary for a politician is to be right, to be in the right, and they can do whatever they want in support, in service of those right ideas. That is not what this country was built on. This country was built on consent of the governed. Even if you have a right idea, what if the people are not ready for it? More importantly, how do you know your ideas are right if they're radically unpopular? Isn't it possible that you're mistaken? And I mean, how many of the president's ideas are really panning out well? I'm just curious, but I know that from my perspective, there's so many things that he's tried to do. But my main beef, I mean, that's maybe my main beef, but my other main beef is that the media never points out the contradictions people, you know, I mean, the average person doesn't pay enough attention to things because they're busy making, earning a living. They're busy watching over their family, paying their bills, you know, going to work. This person is not going to catch all of these contradictions. The media has refused to communicate these convictions because they are persuaded into this religion of liberalism. And a liberal, by definition, slants the table, slants the board, marks the cards, loads the dice, you know, edits the news clip so it looks one way instead of another. They're not bothered by that. I think a conservative way of reporting the news is to tell the whole thing and let people draw out of what they've heard, out of the facts, what the conclusion is. Liberalism, they have to turn it into baby food. Kelly O'Connell, John Lennon, Mind Games, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450.
We're playing those mind games together.
It is the 4th of January 2016. We made it, believe it or not. If you're listening to this, you made it. Officially, congratulations. I want to thank the person, the mystery woman who brought the tools to extract lobster meat. Brought them over to Tiffany's restaurant so I don't have to use a hammer next time. Although I'm sure that I will use a hammer. It was a lot of fun. But thanks for that. All right, so I looked at the articles, and of course the articles in Mother Jones, places like that, said that there is a biological reason that conservatives act the way they do, because they have more fear in their brain. And because they have more fear, they're more afraid of foreigners, xenophobia, et cetera. Salon. Secrets of the Right Wing Brain. New study proves that conservatives see a different, hostile world. I think how you're raised has a lot to do with it. We do have a phone call here. How you're raised has a great deal. My dad was a fairly conservative person. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Edward again. I just have to make one more comment.
Yes.
You know, when the president, any president, takes office, the first thing they have to do is take the oath, that and what the wording of the oath is, to protect, and, you know, they say that I solemnly swear that, you know, I will faithfully execute the office of the president of the U.S. and will do the best of my ability to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution.
Right.
So how can you touch the, you know, that is the Constitution, our
well,
Second
good
Amendment.
Question.
So,
good question.
You know, that is,
thanks, Edward.
That's true.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. The good question there. So here's all right. This is the dilemma that I see it. And we'll get into this a little bit more on a couple of these articles. The dilemma is that as far as I can tell, the president is acting like he's the president of the world. He's not here to preserve. He's here to preserve and strengthen the world through doing things like fighting global warming. Now, he's not called to save the world. He's called to serve the United States through the Constitution. Now, if the president doesn't believe in the Constitution, he was a constitutional professor. Don't forget that. But I went back, and this is an example of the media not doing their job. I went back and looked at the courses that he taught, and they were all, you know, like race in the Constitution, stuff like that. There's nothing on the record that's to suggest he was a constitutional scholar. I don't think he even took the Constitution that seriously, because he doesn't seem to have any problem breaking it. But it does sound good to say I taught the Constitution. All right. I'm going to start off with the end of one article. One article was titled, "Our Spoiled, Emasculated, Despiritualized Societies in the West Are in Terminal Decline," Christopher Booker, Daily Telegraph. All right, he concludes the article, "The reason why we do not see just how far our spoiled, emasculated, despiritualized societies in the West have lost the plot is that they are the bubble we live in. But these days, there is a great big world out there, much less sentimental and much tougher than what we have become used to. Over the coming years, our world is going to change more than we can imagine." All right, so I found Booker to be a pretty good soothsayer, fortune teller, whatever you want to call it. And all right, so here is this other article that I find to be pretty fascinating. I'm just going to kind of introduce it, take a break, and then come back and dig into it. This is from the Daily Beast, "How Liberals Are the New Autocrats." All right, and this is from Joel Kotkin, and after I read this article, I bought like four of his books last night. And the subheadings here are "The End of Localism," "The Authoritarian Impulse," "The Rule of the Wise," "The Road to Imperium," "Slouching Towards Imperium." Imperium is the change in ancient Rome between the Republic to the empire, or to the tyranny. And then he finishes up with "The Coming Conflict." I'm going to get into those. All right, we'll be back. I just wanted to kind of set the table for some things that I think are going to be happening, or already happening. 743 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, 523-1450 to call in, and we'll be right back. Peace on earth. We all been playing no
All right, so here is this article. It is out of the Daily Beast, How Liberals Are the New Autocrats. Number one, the end of localism. He talks about how, although there's a lot of support out there for localism, you know, buy local, buy from the farms around you or the manufacturers that are living around you, that there's actually an enormous amount of support for a centralization of the economy, centralization of our lives. Now, it comes out of the left, but as you can see in Washington, D.C., Paul Ryan fell right into it. He didn't. One of the things that Nancy Pelosi said is he didn't even try to fight back against what they demanded, which is, you know, I mean, totally bizarre. But anyway, here's a little quote from this guy's article. In some ways, the extreme discontent in America, epitomized by the xenophobic Trump campaign — xenophobic means fear of foreigners or strangers — reflects a similar opposition to the bureaucratic overreach. This is going to grow, and there are initiatives out there in which the powers that be seek to enforce racial and class balances in neighborhoods and high-density housing in low-density suburbs. So, I mean, if you're living in an all-Hispanic neighborhood, in theory, the government could come in and say, you need some Asians or whites or blacks to move in. And according to this theory, they've got every right to do it. Now, he gets into another point here. Historically, argument for the rule of betters, the betters amongst us, has largely been an argument of the right, the far right, or the right. Indeed, the very basis of traditional conservatism, epitomized by the UK's Tory ideal, was that society is best run by those with the greatest stake in its success and by those who have been educated, nurtured, and otherwise prepared to rule over others with a sense of justice and entitlement. But in this century, the idea of handing power to a properly indoctrinated group has also found radical expression in the totalitarian ideas such as communism, fascism, and national socialism. That was just last century. So in America and the EU, the ascendancy of power has been realigned to be vested in the academy or the university system, the mainstream media, and the entertainment and technology communities. This new group relies not on tradition, Christianity, or social hierarchy to justify its actions, but worships at the altar of expertise and political correctness. This really caught my attention. And I think that's some of the reason that we've had such bad decision-making is because of this, you know, that there are not people out there asking what the outcome of these policies will be. It's really that the person making the decision has the right and the power to make it, and that they're the only group of people, this kind of Ivy League class of far leftists, is the only people that has got the right to lead America. 7:50, we'll take a break, and I'll finish up this article, which I find to be fascinating. 523-1450, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE.
It's 7:53, just have a minute left here. But all right, so this article also talks about the aggrandizing or the growing power of large institutions because of Sarbanes-Oxley and other bills that have been put through recently after the financial crisis. We've gotten, and the billions of dollars that were just given to banks to avoid a so-called financial collapse, and just a lot of rules, the financial power is being centralized in large banks. Small banks are going the way of the dinosaur. And small banks were the local banks were the driver of small businesses locally that then grew into larger businesses. So it's getting less and less likely or harder to open a bank, a small bank that is going to service the community, an independent bank. And so this guy's saying in ancient Rome, they also became enchanted with slavery because it was free labor. But it debased the entire society. It debased the. It destroyed the. it destroyed the market for free laborers or, blue collar workers, whatever you want to call them. Now, in the same way, by demanding that illegals or certain people be allowed in the country because we have to have cheap labor. I would say does the same thing. And then he finishes up the article. There is no huge appetite for expanding federal power among the majority of the populace. But that most people are very nervous about the ever expanding powers of the state, or a lot of people are. And he says, if we continue down the road we're on, we're going to become more like France or Russia, in which the freedoms are evaporated and the government takes a larger control in the direction of the state. And the upshot, the end result of that is that we will have lost our original identity and that we're moving in that direction. So I thought it was a pretty good article. And the guy's name is Joel Kotkin. But I would ask you, what are we doing to preserve our liberties? What are we doing to fight against this kind of, and notice it's not just the decision making or the direction that things are headed in. There's this enormous attitude that comes with it. You know, if you disagree with the state, with the society, with the culture, then you're a bad person. It's not just political correctness, but it kind of hides behind that you've got to, you've got to be more socialistic or whatever, however you want to describe it. There's people in our society that are arguing that it is time to switch from a democracy, a wild democracy or a democracy that cannot be totally controlled, to a directed society. And it doesn't therefore matter what something that I had brought up earlier, the consent of the governed was a big deal to John Locke, who's the kind of the father of the Constitution through the founding fathers, the father of the Declaration, that he said the thing that makes a political rule morally acceptable is the fact that you're representing the populace, the majority of the people. In this new direction that the government is heading in, it's not going to matter because the government is going to decide what's best for the people. And even if only a tiny fraction of the people want to go along with that, they're going to do it because we will have lost our individual rights and have ceded power back to the state. And so anyway, I thought you might enjoy that. Thanks for listening in. Welcome back to 2016. And I'm looking forward to a really good year myself. And we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Yeah, I hope you have a great day. Stay warm out there. And I guess it may even rain today. So be careful out there. AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 for tomorrow. Write that down. Have a great day. Ciao.